The Production Expert Podcast with Mike Thornton, Emma Bart, and Alan Salabank.
Welcome to the Production Expert Podcast number 413. It's March the 30th, 2020. I'm Mike Thornton.
I'm Alan Salabank.
And I'm Emma Butt.
And deals this week. We've got some great deals from brands like Artoria, Avid, iZotope, SynchroArts, Sound Particles, Editor's Keys, Focusrite, and RSPE in our deals page. So check out the link in the article if any of those interest you. And we'll move straight on to our talking points. And these are sponsored by Artoria.
Hello, experts and listeners. Pro Tools Expert Talking Points is brought to you with the support of Artoria.
Artoria has a wide selection of software effects, including three compressors, three filters, three preamps, and three delays you'll actually use. The latest release, Three Delays You'll Actually Use, includes Delay Tape 201, Delay Memory Brigade, and the unique and experimental Delay Eternity. A bundle of selected effects called the AudioFuse Creative Suite is included with all AudioFuse audio interfaces. Follow the link in the podcast article or visit Artoria.com to find out more on the effects you'll actually use.
Okay, so first talking point. I thought it would be good, especially as we are on a post-production special today, to actually take a look at how the COVID-19 lockdowns are impacting on our workflows and what things we may well have done to try and keep going where possible. Partially, I'm kind of in a better position in the sense that I haven't had to move. I always work from home, but nevertheless, things have changed. Alan, I saw from social media that you've kind of had to pack up your studio and kind of bring it home, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, we live in a town about 15 miles from Bristol city centre, and that's where my studio was, right in the thick of it, in the middle of Clifton, in the middle of the media village. And a lot of sound engineers worked in pretty much isolation all the time anyway, but you can't get over the fact that you're just adding a risk, you're adding expense, having to commute in and what have you. And around here, the public transport system isn't as good as London. So I was always going there on my own, in my own car, or on my bike with my mask on, and so that wasn't a huge issue. But then, because with these social distancing, I couldn't have anyone attending anyway, it seemed a bit silly considering that this is likely to go on, about 6 months, to be paying rent on a location which is there just because of its location. And it was accessing the outside world in exactly the same way as my home would be. So that was sort of that decision as well. My wife is a freelance fitness instructor, and so her work has completely dried up, and she was going somewhat sort of stir crazy in the run up to the proper lockdown. So, with me still having to go into my physical location. So there was that. There were lots of factors to consider, but to give you a bit of background on my company, 8DB, it was set up from day one to be able to work remotely, and that has been its general sort of business model. So we've always had a good speed internet connection wherever we are. We've always had the ability to be able to pick up the entire studio as such, or a mobile version, and take it to another place with very minimal fuss. But I mean, not wanting to sound smug at all, but this is exactly what we've been preparing for the last 7 years. So all we really need now is some content to work on, which is the main thing, which what I've noticed indeed, particularly, is not any resistance towards remote working or remote attendance by the clients. It's just that the basic infrastructure we've got in the UK, internet-wise, it's not really up to everybody working from home. For example, I mean, a member of my more distant family, his girlfriend is a picture editor for TV Factual, and she's been trying to remote edit on a 3-screen Avid over a not even fibre broadband link, which has, you can imagine, it's just apparently been very challenging. And I think that the main issue with that has been that a lot of the content makers are still operating with the same security restrictions that they had before, when they could guarantee that the facility would be disconnected from the outside world in the production areas, or have physical security on the front doors, door passes, and all that sort of stuff. And I think the problem is also that the major distributors are still insisting on that to an extent. I really think in these days, I think we're going to have to readdress, take a step back and reevaluate how secure remote working can actually be. I mean, the technology is there. We can work securely and remotely, and to an extent, I would say that a small housebound or more remote facility, it's actually by its very nature more secure than the facility where you've got a footfall of hundreds per day going into the various communal areas and such. And even with security passes, you've still got tens, 50, whatever, odd people coming in and out of that building. They're all generally security clear, but it only takes like one phone call from a machine room area where there's some audio playing in the background or anything like that. Just, you can accidentally leak footage. It happens. I've seen it happen many times. And I think as long as freelancers are sensible with what they share on social media about what they're working on, which has always been the case anyway for the last decade, as long as you sort of respect the wider security implications, I don't think there's anything that can't be got around. I think it can all be worked around very well. But obviously, though, what there is a supply and demand issue. So there's a lot of serial dramas being put on hold for the moment. A lot of stuff that was going to be filmed going on hold. I mean, we were coming into the beginning of the sort of filming season again. So where they could go on location and it wouldn't be pouring of rain or snowing, or, you know, if that's what they need. And they, you know, they wouldn't have to like CGI out people's breaths in the cold air. But then again, we also, you know, the structure of most scripted content, it's an ensemble piece. It's shot by a team of people, this sort of stuff. It requires social interaction. And unless somebody very clever writes a drama based around social distancing, then I don't see much content being made for a few months. But
no, I mean, that's the whole area that we're going to have to, yeah, that's going to have knock-on effects, and we'll probably come back to that presently. Emma, how is this lockdown affecting you?
Well, I mean, ADR requires you to be in a room with actor, director, producer, and maybe one or two other people, so it is just decimated. I was in the middle of a four-month contract where I was primarily doing ADR recording, and we just had to down tools and stop. So many productions are in the midst of post-production and they still have to get a hell of a lot of ADR done and they just can't do anything. It's all on hold. So there's been a few of us having discussions about different ways that we might be able to tackle this. Like there's options of setting up a remote ADR kind of, not facility, but just a setup where an actor can drive up to this setup himself or herself, go into this protected booth, which has been sterilized, record their lines, but it's operated remotely by someone in a different building, in a different room. And hopefully that might be a solution, but otherwise there's just no way around it until social distancing is kind of, you know, we've stepped down and we're given the okay that we're okay to be in a room together. It just can't happen.
Well, I think, I mean, certainly in the Bristol area, there's the space and there's the facilities. I mean, there's that, there are actually buildings where, which have either studios in adjacent buildings, but with separate entrances and separate facilities, so separate kitchens, separate toilets, all that sort of stuff, separate air conditioning. So it is possible to do these sort of things, not so much in Soho, because again, because of security regs, you always come in and out of the same entrance through a secure entrance. Yeah. And again, also getting somewhere in Soho without encountering anybody else, that's a challenge as well, even in the quietest of times. However, I mean, there's at least two places in Bristol I can name, which, you know, that they have separate entrances to recording areas. The areas that are the other end of the building from each other. They have separate facilities, either in an adjacent or separate building as well. And I mean, a lot of the production staff I've talked to have actually, you know, they've said, actually, yeah, we'd be absolutely fine to return. We'd be absolutely fine to sort of remote attend all this stuff. As long as you don't mind our kids interfering and giving their own feedback at the same time when I'm sat in the lounge reviewing this. I don't mind at all doing that. And it's been generally well received, but I can see that some productions will find it very, very difficult to get to adapt to this sort of workflow. And this is interesting because there's a lot of the TV drama that I've done over the last decade or so, because of the rise of things like RX, which have been able to save so many lines, what we've been noticing more is that the productions haven't actually fully shot the dialogue they actually want on the set. So a lot of, I did a Brit flick movie a few years ago, and 95% of the ADR was non-technical. It was new dialogue. So there's a lot of attitude of, well, you know, fix it in the mix, fix it in the edit, and all that sort of stuff. And that's what's going to need to change.
So Emma, with ADR, as you've said, ADR is pretty well dried up. So what if anything is keeping you occupied at the moment?
Well, I've managed to pick up the tail end of a production that has already been shot in advance. It was just finishing off a few mixes and doing some track lays for them. But that kind of finishes tomorrow. And then after that, I mean, I joined the ranks of freelancers who are unemployed. There's going to be nothing for me to keep me occupied now for the next at least 2 months. Both of my next contracts have gone. My pencil in June is still TBC, but it all depends on what happens over the next few weeks. So essentially, I am going to be twiddling my thumbs for a few weeks, which as a workaholic, I am not looking forward to.
But so presumably with you will, do you land under the freelance bailout system, for want of a better word, that the UK government has offered, or are you in the limited company trap?
No, I have to say that I was fortunate enough to not go the limited company route. So I stayed as a sole trader, self-employed, and I fall within, you know, the bracket that I'm eligible for the grant money. Whether I'll actually get it now is another to be seen. I also applied for the Universal Credit, and I find out this week if I'm going to be eligible for it, because I figured there was a huge amount of guilt when I applied for it. Mm. But at the same time, I know I'm not going to be working now for 2 months. And if we're not getting anything until June, I kind of felt, well, I do need support. I do need to get a little bit of help, and I need to be able to pay my bills. So I'm just going to have to bite the bullet and apply for it and see what happens.
I don't think you should feel guilty at all. I mean, presumably like the rest of us, you pay your tax in national insurance. Certainly for the last decade in the UK, at the risk of getting a little bit political, we've been getting precious little return for our taxes and national insurance. And, you know, now's the time that we get paid back. And I think I'm in the same position as you, as being a sole director limited company.
Yeah.
So, you know, I pay myself PAYE, but obviously I still can't furlough myself. So, because then that.
No, I mean, that is the challenge that we currently find ourselves in.
I think the one way around it might be to furlough yourself as an employee, so effectively making yourself redundant, but then carry on being paid as a director, which is separate to PAYE, but then you'd be paid by dividends, which also get taxed as well anyway. So,
and that assumes there's money in the business that you can pay yourself from the dividend. I think that's very quickly going to get into a situation where, because there's no income coming in, because we're not able to do that much work. But yeah, I mean, that is going to be somewhat of a challenge. And I, you know, again, this is obviously, we're talking here, three of us all live in the UK. These are the restrictions and the services and support that our UK government has given us. Obviously, we appreciate that different countries are doing it differently. Some countries, especially in Europe, are choosing effectively to pay everybody a wage, in inverted commas, not requiring people to jump through various hoops to, you know, confirm who they are. But obviously that means effectively suddenly a huge payroll system is going to have to be set up. Whereas obviously some countries like the UK, for those in full-time, you know, employment, so being PAYE, pay as you earn, taxation, the government has all the details about who you are and effectively can channel the money through the company that it would be normally paying you. So that makes, you know, from an administration point of view, there's a lot of merit in that system. It took them a while to work out the self-employment support for those people who are self-employed, freelancers essentially. But I think that was just because it was the structures behind trying to set up a system was that somewhat more complicated. But that is now in place. So freelancers, self-employed people, ideally with 3 years worth of trading, can show what their normal income would be and therefore can qualify for 80% of that, up to the same sort of threshold that our employed people of £2,500 per month. But yes, those of us who are directors of limited companies, it is still there is no support at all, which I'm hoping the government will fix one way or another. There's a lot of pressure being brought to bear.
I mean, the ridiculous thing with my becoming a limited company was that it was at the behest of the company that I was made redundant from. So, see, basically in the UK, if you're a sole trader, there are limitations on how much of a year you can work for any one company exclusively, and how many consecutive days you can do in the row. So I think it's something like 90 days in the year and 7 consecutive days even. And you have to prove to HMRC that you're working for a variety of companies in order to be excluded from that scrutiny. And Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, as the people outside the UK might not know what I mean by HMRC, they pay special attention to our industry because...
Yes, we get a lot more closer in scrutiny than other industries, no doubt.
HMRC has its own department for us, which is
and it's not, you know, it's not just yourself. A lot of freelancers, for instance, in the in all sorts of sectors, from broadcast to post production to location filming, there has been pressure to bear because of all of the criteria that you're talking about, that self-employed people become limited companies where they are the one and only director. And unfortunately for those of us that is now the case, we find ourselves, as I say, in a trap. But Emma, it's good at least that you are an old school freelancer, self-employed. Yeah. So at least all things being equal, that system will be there to support you. As you say, you've got, you know, rent to pay and what have you.
Yeah. Can I just ask, have you two been following Martin Lewis on Twitter?
Yes.
I've found him really helpful to explain what's been going on. Because personally, the government are not being very clear with any of us really about what we're entitled to. And trying to dig through all of their terminology has been a nightmare, but I found that he's been really helpful at breaking it down into layman's terms. Mm.
So this is Martin Lewis was a TV broadcaster, journalist looking at sort of consumer affairs, shall we say. Yeah. But he now he still does that. He presents a number of TV shows where he helps to break down various issues. But he also runs a website, if memory serves me right, it's Money Saving Expert. Yeah. But he's got this, as you say, this knack, this skill, I guess because of his experience, of being able to explain things in a no-nonsense, simple way that most mere mortals can understand. And he is a tireless campaigner for all sorts of issues and it's good to see that he is making a difference.
Yeah, my accountant's been boiling down a lot of the advice that's been coming around, and they've been sending out regular emails in support of their clients. And this is the problem we see, because none of the measures, all the measures that have been announced by the UK government are at least a month away, even if you pay PAYE. Which does present us, a lot of us, with a big hole to try and work out. And the big problem, if you follow social media, is that so many journalists are in a rush to get a headline out and to cover that headline. And what you quite often get is flooded with headlines, but very little detail. So that's the issue facing us an awful lot at the moment, because it's a case of, oh, okay, great, they're looking after the self-employed, but how? And the one thing I've found is the banks have been pretty reasonably good with this, because I think they've recognised as well, they're pretty much in the same boat. They're also grasping for the detail of all these things, trying to work it out. So I think you should, talk to your accountant, especially if you're self-employed or director of a company. You should have an accountant, and then they should, it's in their interest. You pay them a fee, and if you don't have any business or work, you can't pay them their fee. You've got no income, you know. So it's absolutely in their interest also to help you out and to seek out all sorts of things. So yeah, it's a very tricky situation. It's a case of trying to work out how much time we've got, balance that against what's in the bank, and to try and plan ahead as well. I think there's if too many businesses take the decision to shut up shop and effectively mothball themselves. I worry that when we come through this, there will be a shortage of people and facilities. And I worry that the big facilities are then also going to, I mean, this is talking from bitter experience, but I'm worried that the big facilities are going to forget the people who have actually helped them get through this in the first place. And they're going to still be looking at the bottom line again, because they're also, you know, they're companies that they're going to be hurting massively. I mean, the big Soho facilities are paying six figures a quarter on rent alone.
Yeah. And that's not going to stop even if they furlough all their staff.
Exactly. So, you know, they've got to keep these promises, in terms of the post-production services, they've got to keep their servers running, they've got to keep their expensive internet.
Well, the servers, because if anybody's working remotely, the one thing they still need is the servers.
No, absolutely. So, you know, it's even if they furlough their staff as such,
there's still quite a significant amount of fixed overhead.
Exactly.
They can't. But I think what I'd like to do at this point is just take it a little bit wider and turn to the poll. At the weekend, we published an article, How Has COVID-19 Affected Your Studio Business? And as I say, that was a poll, and we had a range of options from, thankfully, it has not affected your business at all so far, through to I've lost all my work. And we've posted the results as of today with 931 responses. So statistically, it's already a good number. What is interesting is that looking at the figures, we've got over 53% of the respondents have lost 70% or more of their work. So over half the people who have replied have lost 70% or more of their work. What is interesting is that the second largest number, which is has a sort of certain amount of good news, is that 19% have so far not been affected, which is a number that I wouldn't have predicted. I would have expected that number. But nevertheless, over half the people have had, you know, two-thirds, more than two-thirds of their work has already gone. So, and this, of course, is worldwide, because although we've been talking about the UK situation here, it's a situation that is affecting every single country in the world. All the major sort of, you know, media centres, whether it's down under in Australia, New Zealand, whether it's over in LA, throughout Europe, we are all effectively under some form of lockdown. It may be not as severe, some countries may not be as severe as other countries, but essentially that is the situation. And as we've already suggested, it's probably not going to be, it's not going to recover that soon. I mean, some people are talking about 3 months, other people are talking about 6 months. The honest answer is nobody knows. You know, we've only really got China's sort of coming out of this model, and even that, they're only starting to come out of it. So we've no real idea how this is going to pan out. And I think one of the worrying factors, especially for our industry, is something that we were touching on earlier, is the fact that, okay, so it's obviously not going to happen, but let's say everything relaxes tomorrow and, you know, social distancing is done and dusted, that the amount of shooting, the amount of acquisition of projects that we need, you know, we need to work on has stopped, you know, and obviously it's going to have stopped for 3 months or so by the time maybe we start coming out of this. And so we especially as an industry, I think, are going to continue to suffer from lack of work for many months after all of this social distancing is relaxed, because there simply won't be the work. I mean, presumably, Emma, or the sort of work that you do, you've got to wait until the project is shot. I mean, obviously, there'll be a certain amount of stuff that you were working on when when the shutters came down. But once that's done, then I guess it's going to be a bit of a big gap again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of lucky in that I straddle the lines of factual and high-end drama. The high-end drama and feature film work, definitely, it's going to be a while. I can see us not getting busy really until next year.
Yeah.
Because realistically, like you said earlier, shooting would have started happening in the summer. Now that's not going to happen. So any drama that was planning to shoot in the summer that is not cancelled and is just postponed, realistically, is not going to start back up until September. And when you look at shooting schedules, I mean, it's going to be shooting for quite a long time, then it's got to go to editing, and then it comes to audio. We're not going to see it until January, February. I think the timeline of traditional shooting and film and our peaks and troughs in post-production has just totally changed. I think everybody can agree that the industry is going to look very, very different at the end of this. Whether that's good different or bad different is still to be seen. But our timelines, our schedules that we are so used to and so reliant on, I think that's just gone out of the window. This is going to knock it all off kilter. Factual, I think, realistically, will get back on its feet a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Because a lot of that is fast shooting, fast turnaround. Yeah. I think that'll be fine. As soon as that lockdown is lifted and they can get out there with a camera, that'll be it.
They'll be out there as fast as possible, because there'll be a lot of stories to tell they'll want to be out there telling them.
Which is exactly as it should be. And it's also kind of funny in that Factual was facing this period recently where it was kind of dying a death, in that all of the investment, all of the money was going into high-end drama because that's what people wanted to watch. And now we've ended up into a situation where high-end drama has to do some serious thinking about how it's going to, you know, approach this whole situation. Whereas Factual can just grab their cameras, get out and get going.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the funding that used to go to high-end drama, we may see now redirected into Factual and entertainment because it's more doable.
I think people like Netflix are going to, you know, that will help with the factual side, because I think they recognize that a story about people can be marketed far, far wider than, say, through the BBC. So, I mean, most factual that is commissioned for the BBC only gets shown in the UK and then it eventually creeps out abroad. Whereas with Netflix, all that actually goes out across the world at the same time. So that will help. And I think it will help the names of the people who are making the factual and the names of the crew, everybody. I think that will help especially well. But the interesting thing, I do a lot of work on promos and film trailers and such like that. So I've been feeling the effects, the financial effects of this since mid-January, which is when production shut down in China, when film festivals, trade shows, all that sort of stuff got cancelled. So in that respect, from that market, I'm already five figures down on this time last year. So, you know, I was being affected by it 2 months before the lockdown. And that's it. I mean, it's not just people like me. When you have a major film release delayed, as per a recent high-profile one that's just been delayed until the autumn, then there's so many spin-off industries from it as well. I mean, you've got all the promotions departments, and not just promos, you've got all the the franchises that go off that, as well as all the product placement, everything like that. So for every one of these big movies that gets made, especially this particular franchise, there are various manufacturers who are always lining up to shoot trailer-style commercials for their products that are placed in these features. And all that's gone on hold as well. So that's all the editors, not only the film promos, the trailers, also the commercials. You've got the sales departments, all these people who are launching, who work and you know, on launching products off the back of these films. So the knock-on effect is huge. And certainly with the tech companies, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, if a major manufacturer's got a new smartphone that they were hoping to launch off the back of this feature franchise, then I don't know. I mean, are they going to still launch it at the date that they said they were going to? I mean, I don't know. I mean, well, then if it's featured in the film then and it hasn't been launched, what happens then?
Well, yeah, I think a lot of just moving it away from links to feature films, I think quite a few of the products, I mean, certainly there's been discussion in the rumour mill that Apple are considering shelving the release of the next iPhone because they reckon that nobody will have the money to buy it because, you know, we're all going to have to tighten our belts one way or another. But the question I wanted to finish this section on was, do you think we might see some hasty repurposing work which might just sort of help a little bit to provide some work in terms of, I don't know, repurposing, turning stuff around, trying to effectively rework stuff that's already in the can, as it were, you know, getting a second bite of it somehow, some way. Have either of you picked up any sense of that?
Yeah, I've heard that an upcoming, what was going to be live natural history series is now going to become a best of series. And so there will obviously be post-production involved in that because they can't present it live this year round. So, yeah, I suppose there'll be some post coming off the back of that, but quite how much and how detailed that it will be, because it's an archive show effectively, then, you know, it's all been done and put together beforehand. Then, you know, the major part of it has been done already. So, yeah, I mean, I have heard some bits, but I think the problem is that archive shows are cheap to produce and they're cheap to post-produce as well, because there isn't that depth of work required in order to make them broadcastable. But, I mean, have you come across anything like that, Emma?
Nothing yet. I mean, I've heard rumours that we're going to see a lot of archive shows as well, a lot of colour restoration shows, but nothing concrete. I think really everybody is kind of waiting for this 3 weeks to be over to see where we stand before making any decisions. I think although we all know it's going to be longer than 3 weeks, I think everybody's holding off to see exactly how long we might be looking at. I think what's going to be interesting to see what the soaps do.
Yes.
Because obviously they will only have a certain amount of episodes in their back pocket to air. Now, I know the likes of Hollyoaks and Casualty and EastEnders have all cut down their transmission so that it's only once or twice a week.
Make it go further.
Exactly.
Yeah, spread the jam thinner.
Yeah, but what about when that bank of episodes runs out?
Mm.
I think maybe they will start to look at compiling, you know, best of shows from over the years. And then that's when we might see a bit more work coming into post-production.
Yeah. But yeah, just sort of stitch, you know, tidying up the joins.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, I think we should move along. Time is ticking.
The Pro Tools Expert podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you've ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you'll know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be even on a good day. It isn't really good enough for a long form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser with no software to install. To get your free account, then follow the link in the podcast article. So yes, I think Source Connect Now is somewhat topical for one of the tools that we might need in this time of remote working, but possibly a little more on that in our find of the week. So we'll move straight on to our find of the week, which are sponsored by RSPE Audio Solutions.
RSPE Audio carries nearly every great microphone you can think of, from budget to boutique. They have microphones from Sennheiser, Neumann, Earthworks, Shure, Lauten, Paluzzo, AKG, Blue, Townsend Labs, Antelope, and many more. So not sure what mic you need? RSPE's team can help. Just tell them the work you do, and they can recommend a few mics that'll be sure to meet your requirements. Shop online or contact their team to find the right mic for you.
Okay, so find of the week. Emma, what's your find of this week?
Well, mine is a set of online training, free seminars that are being held by Skillset here in the UK. So one of the women who runs Skillset's masterclasses, which are usually done in person, kind of looked at, you know, the whole situation. We're all locked up for quite a while and wanted to help everybody within the industry. So she has contacted a range of professionals. There's like Meet the Commissioner's lunches, there's writing workshops, there's producer workshops, post-production producers workshops, but pretty much everything that you can think of. And they are all free. So they are for an hour and they're scheduled throughout the day for the next 7 weeks. And I just think it's an incredible way to, you know, boost your knowledge and still learn something while you can. And yeah, it's definitely been kind of a lifeline for me for the next few weeks. I'm really looking forward to a lot of the classes that they have coming up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm currently subscribed to the series that are happening on Wednesdays for Dolby Atmos for Music.
I'm signed up to that as well.
Yeah, which Kerry Thomas is running. And I think, obviously, you know, as more and more of us find that we have more and more time, I think this is an ideal opportunity. And it's great to see organizations offering especially free training, because so often training comes with a price tag. But so much of this, that, you know, like this initiative with Skillset, one of the UK's training body for our industry, and other, you know, Dolby with their Dolby Atmos for Music, lots of organizations are offering free training. We've done our bit. Anybody who isn't already subscribing to our premium video tutorial channel, you can now sign up and get it free for 90 days rather than the usual 14 days. So as long as you remember to unsubscribe before the end of the 19 days, it won't cost you a penny or a cent. So it's great to see that various organisations are moving in, you know, are trying to support people at least to be able to provide training whilst we're quite a few of us are twiddling their thumbs. Alan, what's your find of the week?
Well, I've got a few, unfortunately. there's the usual Source Live, and that's proven to be fantastic and at opening up the whole world of remote attendance and such like that.
So just for those that don't know what Source Live is about, just give us the brief outline of what it does to help those of us that are working remotely.
Yeah, so basically Source Live can act a bit like a Skype link-up, but it can properly send video in sync and the audio from your DAW to multiple recipients. And they can also all log in with video chat and audio chat with on a network, so that they can also have their own talkback with their mics switched off until they need to be. They have hotkeys on their computer. And they can basically all contribute to the mix or the session. So it's really versatile. It's very stable. I mean, you do have to put some effort into getting it all set up properly. But Source Elements have been putting together some great tutorials about how to get the best out of all their software, even the free software, Source Connect Now, which we mentioned earlier. So, yeah, I mean, they're doing an awful lot of work helping the industry keep the wheels on the bus as such. But, I mean, also in terms of trying to keep the industry relatively sane, last week the Association of Motion Picture Sound held its first virtual social pub meet as such, and we had about 20, maybe more, people online, but from across the world, which was fantastic. And they ranged from people like Graham Hartstone, the former head of sound and Kubrick and Bond movie mixer, to brand new members of AMPS who just recently joined, and people who are abroad and people who are in self-isolation. And the mood was really, it was fantastic. So many people, I think, and going by the comments on their Facebook page as well the day after, I think so many people were happy to see other people they'd come across during their careers and become friends with in the business, but yeah, maybe geographically distanced from now, or haven't seen in years, like Graham and myself. It left me with a huge smile.
Absolutely.
And a serious hangover the morning after. But yeah, I mean, this is the other thing. I think we need to look after our mental health as well as our physical health. And I think getting together, group chat, getting together and talking about what's worrying you, what you're enjoying, what you're finding fantastic, all this sort of stuff. So at the AMPS virtual social, there were like great tips flying around about claiming for these various compensations and such like that. There, one of the one of the attendees was a member of his family is actually diagnosed with COVID-19, and it was very interesting to hear from a person who was actually right at the front line, and not hear it via the national news, not hear it sensationalized, just to hear it actually as it is.
Good.
And everybody I know who attended it came away from it with a beaming smile and at least slightly more hope moving forward.
Well, carrying on the sort of remote access thread, today on Twitter I came across a tweet from a post-production facility called, I love this name, Final V2. I mean, you know what the situation that people have with, never ever use the word final. So I think that was a really neat name. So that's a post-production team made up of Rob Bryars, Johnny Vince Evans, and Michael Raphael. And they've got 50 years of combined experience between them, and they put out a couple of really useful free guides, and we'll put links to these guides in the podcast article. One, how to use Pro Tools with Zoom being in this case the video conferencing system, which seems to be getting a lot of use in business settings, and so for those that perhaps Source Live is a bridge too far in terms of pricing, it's certainly worth a look to see whether you can get by with something like using Zoom to effectively enable people remotely to view and hear your audio. It's obviously not going to be the same quality, but people are coming up with all sorts of tricks to try and improve that. And they've also, for people trying to do podcast interviews and the like, there is another free help guide to help you through connecting multiple voiceover IP codecs for interviews using a product called Loopback from Rogue Amiga, who have got a number of tools out. In fact, we ran an article today, Monday, about their SoundSource product. So again, these are all sorts of tools that have been around, but now suddenly have lots of people needing to use them. So so heads up and a real shout out to the guys at Final Version 2 for putting together those free guides. And again, just picking up on Emma's find of the week as well in terms of training and support. And it's great to see how many people are really helping without charging. And I think in this this really quite hard and difficult time, it's a great thing to see. So on that note, it's good night from me.
Good night from me.
To be
overlap, Alan.
Good night.